Jema. We are with The Mother, Question and Answers, 1955, Volume 7. So if you see the picture of the mother taking classes, it is literally, its literal meaning would be Upanishad. Because Upanishad means two things: sitting at the feet of the master. And the second meaning is going to the heart of inner knowledge. And you see actually that on one side, everybody is sitting at the feet of the master, mother, more than, you know. So everybody is sitting, if you see that picture, mother is sitting on that chair. It's an amazing picture to see with the table lamp, how she is. And for everything, she takes you to the heart of that knowledge. So normally, ordinarily, we make a distinction, even the Upanishads make a distinction at times between higher knowledge and lower knowledge. In the original Vedic lore, this distinction is not there. It's subsequent human thought, which mind could not really bridge the gap. But she brings out the higher truth hidden behind everything. And that's what is the beauty of reading her words. And till date, I have not understood why her works are read so much lesser than the Life Divine and other works. I have not understood. They carry such profound mysteries of existence. If nothing else, just for knowing yourself, the world, yoga, of course, everything. But for some reason, even for a long time, it was difficult to get. I think now they have the collected works, which is so nice. So, without much ado, let's go straight away. We had read part of it last time, and now we'll continue. So she says, sometimes when we imagine, there is a famous book which came, The Secret, as if it's given some very profound truth. The mother says, if you have desired certain things, imagined certain things, they carry a force. And they go around. Desires are very active forces. Imagination also, because it's the capacity to throw images. And it goes around in the world to try to fetch you whatever you are imagining and whatever you are desiring. And she says, sometimes it comes much later when you don't want it or you have forgotten about it. And it's a very, you know, strange situation one is caught in. And then the disciple asks that, well, several things. One of them is that when mother gives a work, does she go by your desire for a particular work, or she gives based on your inner truth? And mother says, if you read the first part, it sounds very strange. She says, she gives you according to what you want. But then she explains. She says, if I tell them that no, you are not suited for this, you are suited for something else, they will never understand it. So what happens is, she gives them what they want so that over a period of time you understand that this is not what is meant for me. So she gives, lets you go through a certain experience even about desires. That's why the principle in the ashram is that surrender yourself. And if there is a particular work she wants to do through you, not that anybody can do her work, then she will arrange circumstances, means and everything. So these are truths she reveals. There is a very beautiful passage. I want to read so many things, and time is always a rare commodity. It's about grace. So she first says that people desire, then things come in their life, and then they say that I don't desire it any longer. And then they go through whatever painful experience they have to go through. One must have a great purity. Page 239, one must have a great purity and a great intensity in one's self-giving. She says the safety is give yourself. Don't keep demanding, asking. Give yourself to the divine. She knows best. We know that famous example of Amrita on his birthday when mother asks, what do you want, Amrit? He is quiet and she says, I can give you anything. Liberation, there's the 100 things. And Amrita is sitting quiet. And then she says, ask something. Then he says, I want two banyans. And people asked him, he says, you think she depends on my asking? She knows what I need. She will give me, I know it. Liberation, highest states she is giving. So why two banyas? She is asking me, now she is commanding me. So I can't disobey her. So I conveyed my immediate need. So this is the path that those who have gone ahead, they have shown to us. And so amazing when you read the life of the disciples. And that absolute trust in the supreme wisdom of the divine grace, that it knows better than we do what is good for us and all that. This trust in the divine grace, when we give ourselves, it should be full of trust that she knows. We don't have to worry about what we need, what is good for us. She will give us what is good for us. Then if one offers one's aspiration to it, truly gives it with enough intensity, the results are marvelous. Aspiration is different than desires, obviously. So we give ourselves to the divine and we aspire. Let's say that, Mother, I want to be of use to you. Or, Mother, I want to be one with you. Mother, I want your constant contact. Whatever be the aspiration. Then there are marvelous results. But one must know how to see them. For when things are realized, most people find it absolutely natural. They don't even see why and how it has happened. And they tell themselves, yes, naturally it had to be like that. So they lose the joy of gratitude. Many times we will see that as a child we have aspired for something. And much later you discover that, oh yes, even passingly one has aspired and the divine has granted, prepared you and at a point of time given you. If one can be filled with gratitude and thanksgiving for the divine grace, it puts the finishing touch. And at each step one comes to see that things are exactly what they had to be and the best that could be. So very simple practice. Turn to the Divine Mother. Give yourself to her grace. Have your aspiration, offer the aspiration at her feet. Don't worry about your life, your demands, desires, anything. And then be full of trust and confidence. And then things will happen. Whatever happens, receive it as prasad and be full of gratitude. That's the yoga. But very few are ready to undertake that kind of yoga. There is a very interesting part where she speaks about magic, occultism and yogic powers. And she says there are people who hunt after powers. Occult powers, and they want to be great. They try to, you know, even show that they have either some knowledge or power. And she says it's very dangerous. She says they may succeed, but especially after death, it's not an easy passage for them. She reveals that. She says when powers come to you naturally as a result of yoga, as a gift of her grace, and they are used only under her inspiration, that's a different thing than trying for these powers and using them for satisfaction of the ego. And there is a beautiful image she gives on page 267. There are several images Mother has given about discovering the psychic being. So we can take help of images. So one of the images, to sit in meditation before a closed door, as though it were a heavy door of bronze. And one sits in front of it with the will that it may open and to pass to the other side. And so the whole concentration, the whole aspiration is gathered into a beam and pushes against this door and pushes more and more with an increasing energy until all of a sudden it bursts open. And one enters. It makes a very powerful impression. And so one is as though plunged into the light. And then one has the full enjoyment of a sudden and radical change of consciousness. This is the sign that one has passed to the other side. It's a reversal, a radical change of consciousness. One feels illumined and there is a peace and joy. And the feeling that one is becoming another person. And this is a very concrete and very powerful way of entering into contact with one's psychic being. So you see so many beautiful, simple methods she has given. Then there are people who speak about photographs of the mother. And there you will see sometimes photograph, this is Maheshwari, this is Mahakali, Mahalakshmi, Mahasaraswati. So people often ask that which one is which. How does it matter? Turn to the mother. She'll take care of everything. Or to, if you want to connect with one particular aspect, to any photograph, you can turn and seek that aspect. So here she reveals that mystery. Question asked is, sweet mother, when we concentrate on one of your photos, there are many photos, each one with a different expression. Does it make a difference for us, the one on which we concentrate? So you see, this is a big gift she has given. Photographs of the mother are not for remembrance only. They are a powerful action. I have seen even with a painting made by Champak Lalji. You can't imagine a painting of a, not Champak Lalji, sorry, mother, of a lion, face of a lion. So I had put in my room, and you won't believe, that night I literally, in my dream, saw a lion moving about in the house. These things are very powerful. She put something in there. This is a painting. Photographs. Her photographs are a concrete help given to us. So she says, if you do it purposely, yes, of course. If you choose this photo for a particular reason, or that other one for another reason, surely it has an effect, because it's the way you are connecting. It is as though you were choosing to concentrate on one aspect of the mother rather than another. For example, if you choose to concentrate on Mahakali or Mahalakshmi or on Maheshwari, the results will be different. That part of you which answers to these qualities will awaken and become receptive. So Maheshwari, the mind opens, Mahakali, the vital strength, and Mahalakshmi, the love, the emotional center opens, and Mahasaraswati, the entire perfection. But somebody who has only one photo, whichever it may be, and concentrates without choosing this one or that, because he has only one, then it is of no importance which one it is. For the fact of concentrating on the photograph puts one in contact with the force, and that is what is necessary in the case of everyone who responds automatically. So very clearly she says this, another place also she has said this. I know of a true instance narrated by the family members. Then when they came here, they had asked their servant to make sure, you know, everything is fine. Servant used to stay there for long. And they came. Then they asked, when they came back, sab theek tha, everything was fine. He said, yes. And then said, everything was well. He said, wo jo photo mein hai na, Baba ji, every day would come and ask me the same question. They were so touched, they couldn't imagine ki, now of course, we should not turn it into miracle stories. But you know, things happen. I have seen when I was in Bangalore, we were in Bangalore. So we went out for 2 days. So when we came back, there was a theft down below in the house, and massive theft. Later on, they were caught, and we had the same maid servant. And when she was caught, she revealed something very interesting. She had planned for both the houses. She had made duplicates, and she had put the duplicate of our house also in the pot inside, that she will come, take it out and open. She stole the entire thing. But in our house, in the mud pot, she tried and somehow she didn't get. And they didn't want to take a chance, so they hurried away. So it was like literally, and later on they found that she had connections with LTT and all these people. Just imagine that, you know, how she takes care is just beyond our comprehension. So these photographs are not just photographs. Of course, one should not put the divine picture that, okay, please guard my house. Certainly not. It's a connection. Yeah, that will be silly. We are the ones who should be standing at the... But what, to what extent? We have heard the story of, Lord Vishnu guarding the realm of Mahabali, who who is a devotee of the Lord. And why does he guard? Because he offers himself, his ego. And he says, finally, you take me. Now, the moment he offers all the domains and finally himself. See, that story is very interesting. That he has offered the heavens because he had conquered them. He offered the earth which he has conquered. And finally, he says, where do I place my third feet? He's put, he says, on my head, the ego. So he offers himself completely. So he goes into Patal where he should be rightfully belonging. But there is a big difference that he says, since you have given yourself completely to me, and Patal is all kinds of things, and he has to establish a kingdom which is beautiful and dedicated to the divine. He says, I will guard your place. Can we imagine now that the meaning of these stories, which are not just symbolic but so true, when you give yourself to the divine, divine takes care in every way. And what a way he guards. There is a time when all the gods come and they want to meet Bali, and the gatekeeper says no. He says, you don't know who we are. He says, I don't care. I am obeying my master, the king. Says, who is he? He is Narayan. And finally, they try all their powers and fail completely. And then they realize that what a mess they are creating. See, the divine can go to any extent to be with us. But there has to be a self-giving. And then she speaks about different kinds of meditation. We can read it passingly. We read it time to time. There are all kinds of different meditations. What people usually call meditation is, for example, choosing a subject or an idea and following its development or trying to understand what it means. So subject can be the divine, and idea can be idea of love or the divine presence in all. Now that becomes an idea or an image or a name. But that's more of concentration. There is a concentration, but not as complete a concentration as in concentration proper, where nothing should exist except the point on which one concentrates. So concentration literally means ma, 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 ma. Everything else becomes oblivious. And meditation is ma, and then, you know, one is all around her, her glory, her wonder, her grace, her love. So the first one would be concentration, where on the name or the image, which is much more difficult, but yes, it has powerful result. And meditation, which is the easiest of all, where around her or around an idea, the mind runs. Meditation is a more relaxed movement, less tense than concentration. And then she gives a very interesting example. When one is trying to understand a problem which comes up, a psychological problem or a circumstantial one, and he sits down and looks at and sees all the possibilities, compares them, studies them, this is a form of meditation. Meditation is a mental process. You can pick up anything and around which your mind is turning. Of course, best is to place this problem before the divine after looking at all aspects of it. And one does it spontaneously when the thing comes up. When one is facing a decision to be taken, for instance, and doesn't know which one to take, well, ordinarily one reflects, consults his reason, compares all the possibilities and makes his choice, more or less. Well, this is a form of meditation. Very interesting when you really do that, rather than just being driven by the impulse, by the very fact that the mind is moving around the object. A window may open, even if you have not given yourself to the divine or brought the divine into picture, the divine can pick up. It's not like anxiety, burdened, oh, what will happen, what will happen. You are sitting together and trying to find. And suddenly, depending on our receptivity and of course through the mind, so it will be changed. Intuition changes when it wears. You will feel this is the most rational thing I should do. And behind it, it's still the intuition operating. But it has worn the costume of ignorance in which we are dwelling. So she gives that. Now, there is the form of meditation which consists in a concentration on an idea and concentrating one's attention upon it to the extent that that alone exists. Then this is the equivalent of a concentration. But instead of being total, it is only mental. So total concentration means physical, vital, emotional, mind. So mind concentrating on the idea of the divine in all. And just imagine when the heart is engaged with it, the idea of the divine in all, it changes completely. The very body that we are walking and the divine is walking with us. That's how she explains. And all these are ways of meditation, concentration she has given. Only problem is she has not charged any money for it. She has just spoken, and some people have recorded and it's available in the book. So people find it very difficult to understand. If they put it into practice, they will understand that how simple, beautiful and powerful these things are. People understand. Sometimes people say, even, you know, who have been in contact with Sri Aurobindo and the mother, and they undertake courses to learn about meditation and concentration. So I am very puzzled and I am surprised. So I end up asking, have you read Mother and Sri Aurobindo? Then I stay quiet, because you have to go through what you have to go through. So many simple ways, and there are plenty. This I am just picking up from one place. I think every volume we have read something or the other of that kind. And then she speaks of contemplation. So there is concentration, which is on one point. There is meditation, which is a mental activity around an idea. And if there is one idea and you are focused on that, then it becomes closer to concentration. Then there is a total meditation and total concentration where your whole being is engaged. That's how it is called as Bhava Samadhi. And then there is contemplation. In contemplation, you are just open. Just open to the mother and just let her do whatever she feels like doing. Just quietly open to her. And you are just in a receptive state, open to her. So she speaks about contemplation, a kind of opening upwards. It is rather a state of passive opening upwards. It is a fairly passive form of aspiration. One makes the movement, this movement, rather like something opening in an aspiration. In fact, the image that she gives at another place is of the lamp, or rather diya. What is it called in English? Diya with the flame. So there is on one side the aspiration, there on the other side there is the opening. So sometimes, even though Shivlingam is many times in tantric symbols, it is regarded as the Purusha and Prakriti and material nature and the divine. But equally, if you see, you can see like a column of light going upward, and the material nature which is opening itself and receiving all that can come. So it can be seen in that way. So many, the mind can make an image. One makes this movement rather like something opening in an aspiration. But if the contemplation is sufficiently total, it becomes a concentration. Naturally, then you are just turned upwards onto the divine. So these are some of the methods she has given. And then we spoke about choice of works. Politics and finance, he says, it's the last thing to change. And we are wanting things to change. Now see, it is logically also very interesting. People feel disheartened, or people feel happy. They feel a government has come and now things will change. But actually, when people change, the government will come, which will be the representative of truth. So if you really want the government to be a representative of truth, we must change. Even logically, this is how things happen. As somebody says, people get the government they deserve. So if we change, if we evolve inside in our consciousness, become more and more spiritualized, it doesn't matter, one should not worry about numbers, because these things have a cascading effect. One person who is aspiring spiritually and moving upward will automatically, whatever is in the zone of influence, will get affected. It doesn't have to do anything. And then that mounts up and starts influencing the collective consciousness of the people. And I use this example because, since we are talking about it, democracy and all that, people say, see, the heart and the brain, ultimately they decide how the rest of the organs work. The body doesn't work on the basis of democracy. So it doesn't act according to, okay, let's see how the cells. But these two are crucial and critical factors. So if there is a, and people, and that's why when mother was asked that how can we help India, she says, find your psychic being, which is the heart. Then she says, with your psychic being, love the soul of India. And she says, this way you can help to the maximum. That means you are joining with the heart. You love India with your heart, or any country for that matter. And if there is even a few persons who can do it, this has a cascading effect, because this is going to determine. Heart, of course, is the seat of all dynamism. And of course, there can be an intellectual love and service of the country. So she speaks about politics, finance, and she says something very interesting. She says that America and Russia should come together for the good of the world. Right now, they were coming together, but now they are fighting over silly things. Very powerful passage. What it means to set foot on the path. Page 323. What a relief to set foot on the new path. This is worth the trouble of casting behind much luggage, of getting rid of many things in order to be able to take that leap. Some people dream sometimes, at least I had the dream, that you have lost your luggage while you are getting into a train. And you are for some time worried, and then the train starts. What a beautiful dream it is. But in the train, oh, your baggage, your luggage. So this luggage that we are carrying with us, all the bundle of habits, call it karma, call it attachments, call it whatever. In fact, it is the sublimest of adventures. And it, if one has in him in the slightest the true spirit of adventure, it is worth risking all for all. But those who are afraid, who wonder after that talk, thanks to the inspiration, resistance, some people say, sir, it is very frightening. Here is the answer. Mother is saying, but those who are afraid, who wonder, am I not going to let go the substance for the shadow? According to the most... Here she is saying substance. What is substantial? What is in my hand? Shadow. Who knows? It's not shadow in that sense. Am I going to let go of the substance for the shadow? So she says, according to the most banal proverb one can imagine, those who tell themselves, bah, after all, it is better to profit by what one has than to risk losing everything. We don't know what is going to happen tomorrow. Let us take precautions. That's why those who try to first find a house in Pondicherry. This doesn't work out like that. It doesn't work out like that. You come, if there is a leap, you'll come. There will be a house waiting for you. Not that somebody will suddenly come, sir, we know your name has been. It doesn't work. It's a leap. You can't do it with a mental calculation. That when everything is ready, then we will come. It doesn't, I mean, I've seen so many. It doesn't work. And even if you come, you'll ultimately just be in a comfort zone. That's all. So she says, unfortunately, this is very widespread, extremely widespread. In any case, what I call being sincere is this. If one thinks that this new realization is the only thing which is truly worth being lived, if what is intolerable, what is means what life is as it is today, not only for oneself, perhaps not so much for oneself because one's own personal life may be fine, but still, if one is not absolutely selfish and mean, one feels that truly it has lasted long enough, that one has had enough of it, that it must change. Well, when one feels like that, one takes everything, all that one is, all that one can, all that one has, and one throws oneself into it completely without ever looking behind, and come what may. This is the great leap toward the future. She spoke about it when she gave that message. Blessed are those who take a leap toward the future. And this is sincerity. Not we start confusing sincerity with all kinds of our moral, ethical and social notions, God knows what. This sincerity, you take a leap. And then, whatever happens to you, it doesn't matter. I indeed feel that it would be preferable even to plunge into an abyss in this way than to be in the shore, trembling and wondering, what will happen to me tomorrow if I take this rather rash step? See how Amal Kiran once asked Sri Aurobindo that I suppose it's because of my intellect that I could turn to yoga. Because he has written so many, there's this joke about him. Somebody told him, Sri Aurobindo is really great because, he has written so many 30 volumes. He said, in that case, I have written 60. So it's way of reminding that it's not about writing volumes. Because he asked Sri Aurobindo, he says, it's not because of your mind, it's because of your vital. And that he discloses in one of his talks. He said, I had a vital where every, it will fall at, I'm not going to say where, any beautiful face it will fall for it. And he says, one day it saw the Divine Mother and it fell at her feet at the end of the journey. So this plunge, this leap, this jump, people who calculate, the worst is because the mind can never tell you. The mind doesn't know what's going to happen tomorrow. It cannot assure you anything about anything. And yet the mind keeps on calculating. So, jo ubhra, so doob gaya. Jo dooba, so paar. Khusro darya prem ka waaki ulti dhar. So that's how those who take a plunge, she says, even if it's an abyss, you hit rock bottom and suddenly somebody says, what a foolish thing you have done. Yet it is better than all the calculations. Because after all, it's an abyss in her lap. Somewhere you have landed up there. She'll take care. So this is something very powerful. And very practical things. At one place she says about everyday events. What do we greet everybody? Good morning, bonjour. Ashram, I love this, doing this. Some of these people who grow old, they develop these strictures. So people say, hey, stricture ho gaya. I sometimes point out, see where the hand is pointing. So because the hand has got its point, I say, see, even in that physical stricture, look at, turn to the perpetually bonjour. So, yeah. it's not a good thing to have strictures. Somebody may pass stricture on me for saying such a thing, but it's so interesting to see, because your hand, very often, and it's like pointing toward the heart. And basically, she says something very interesting. I think I have explained this to you once. She's speaking about the creative word, the power of the word. And word is vibration. And what is it in human beings which can manifest that vibration is speech. So we have the Paravak, which is the original word, the creative word, and we have the human speech, which is Vaikhari and Madhyama. But actually human speech can receive from that Paravak and express it. This is the whole idea. Of course, one can try through music, but nothing better than human speech because it has all the octaves. And in the human speech, you can bring all these elements, heart, soul, everything directly. Music, you can bring it, but it's much easier. So she gives us something very beautiful. She says, when she speaks about the power of words, there's a whole essay on that, short essay on in volume 2. We have read that earlier, but here she reminds us, I think I have explained this to you once. She has done it in one of her talks. I told you, for example, that words spoken casually, usually without any reflection and without attaching any importance to them, can be used to do something very good. So how? Bonjour, when people meet and say, bonjour. Good day, didn't I? When people meet and say, bonjour, they do it mechanically and without thinking. Have you heard some people in the ashram, when they say, bonjour, some of the older people. It's so interesting, it's like almost like a mantric power. Bonjour, we have our own namaste and we explain all these things. Which is fine, that here there is the divine presence, that's a different matter that nobody cares about it. But what she is saying is something which is still missing. It is the power of the word when you say. So she says, they do it mechanically and without thinking. But if you put a will into it an aspiration to indeed wish someone a good day. Well, there is a way of saying good day which is very effective and much more effective than if simply meeting someone you thought, I hope he has a good day, without saying anything. If with this hope in your thought, you say to him in a certain way, good day, you make it more concrete and more effective. This is a simple service of the mother we can do anyways, no? Every day. It's mother's work to create joy. So sometimes people say that, how to do mother's work? Just be simply happy. There is a person, Sadhak, who used to say, at least I'll reduce one person's burden on earth. Because divine has to labor so much to at least lift me out. Just be happy. Very simply happy. And with that joy, let it be like a contagion and spread to everyone. It's the same thing, by the way, with curses or when one gets angry and says bad things to people. This can do them as much harm, more harm sometimes, than if you were to give them a slap. With very sensitive people, it can put their stomach out of order or give them palpitation. So next time when you have a stomach problem, look around. Whose company are you keeping? It's not about where you went and ate and what you ate. As important, in whose company you ate. Just joking. But because you put into it an evil force which has a power of destruction. So we can obstruct mother's work by criticizing people, by saying things about them which is going to say somebody has a defect or a problem. Now when you say, oh, look at that person. So what you have done? You have strengthened that tendency. A very nice story about, you know, Guru Nanak going to a village and there's a person having severe headache. So Guru Nanak said, well, sab apna kiya hua, your karmas. This story could be anybody, it's attributed to him. So karma hai. So up, what happened? Everybody started looking askance at him. Oh, this fellow is a sinner. That's why he has headache. After 1 year when the Guruji came, he said, thank you, aapki kya kripa drishti ho gayi now, you know, I am cured. He said, you are not cured, everybody has taken your headache on their heads. Because they were critical of you, they were criticizing you all the time. So when we criticize someone, we are actually heaping trouble and difficulties for the other person, as well as taking it upon ourselves. Now I remember Guru Nanak's that pad is there. Paap hamare dhoye, hamare paap, he takes our sins on his shoulder. He says, those who are always critical of others. So what he says, he is such a nice person. He says it with that touch of humor, that he takes your burden upon himself and cleanses you, because he shares it. So it's so important. She is reminding us in various ways. And then she describes this very interesting, that difference, something of this yoga. She says that she has heard a story. There are plenty of stories here. She says she has heard a story about Swami Vivekananda, where somebody is looking at a sunset and he is sitting with him. She says that, I don't know whether this is really attributed to him, but she read it as if from him, that it is, but it could apply to anyone. And whoever there was, and in the story it was Swami Vivekananda, he, when the person said, oh, look how magnificent is the sunset. This had shocked him deeply. I remember I read this in France and it struck me. I still remember, because it seemed to me scandalous. He said, he is whoever the master is, oh, is it beautiful? If you appreciate the beauty of nature, you will never attain the divine. And the mother says, this is a tendency she is fighting against. You can do both. And she says that something very beautifully. I am only saying I had read it and that it struck me so much that many times when I look at the sunset or sunrise or a lovely effect of light, I still recall this and tell myself, why? Such a dissociation? How strange that one can't live the spiritual life if one admires nature. What is hidden in nature is God. So, spiritual life is not turning away from material life. It is seeing, extending that divine presence there also. And looking at everything as if it's either a mirror of God, distorted mirror or a pure mirror, or that presence which is radiating, animating everything and giving it life and value. So, then she says a lot about the Vedic age, and she speaks about these rishis were involutionary beings and they gave a promise. They actually documented their experiences giving a promise of the future. But there was not yet the collective yoga. The entire those who are interested in reading, and this is something very beautiful that she reveals about the Vedic age. And the age which preceded it, which is about the Chaldean, Chaldea. In fact, she speaks of a Chaldean legend. Plenty of interesting stories. And this is because it's in the context that she would give the flower of divine love on Kali Puja Day. Divine love is the pomegranate flower. And to the fruit, the mother has given the name, the fruit of divine sacrifice. So this divine love, and this is the fruit of divine sacrifice. And this flower she would give to people. And someone asked mother, Mother, why do you give this? Why is it called divine love? We see it inside the ashram also. It's very interesting, just as an aside, that you have the divine love tree, which is pomegranate flowers, which you will find if you go towards the little higher ranges of the Himalayas. You will find them. Ramgarh, you have a valley of divine love. Mother has spoken about it. And we also have the cactus, which you find in the desert. I suppose it's a symbol that, well, just as different variety of flowers and plants have found a place there, so too different variety of human beings also find a place here. Where else they will find a place? So she tells this story. And this story is very interesting. It's an old Chaldean legend. It's before the age of the Vedas. And people start interpreting it that what is the name of that person? Each one can have their own guesses. So it's before the age of the Vedas. It's not, you know, people associate, because it's about Arabia. It's not about Islam or Islamic founder or before that. It's important because sometimes people have asked me. Long, long ago in the dry land, which is now Arabia. Now Arabia. A divine being incarnated upon earth to awaken in it the supreme love. As expected, it was persecuted by men. Mark the language carefully. I could actually have a little quiz after this. Just mark the language. As expected, it was persecuted by men, misunderstood, suspected, pursued. Mortally wounded by its assailants, it wanted to die quietly in solitude in order to be able to accomplish its work. And being pursued, it ran away. Suddenly, in the vast desert land, there appeared a small pomegranate bush. The savior crept in under the low branches to leave its body in peace, and immediately the bush spread out miraculously. It grew higher, larger, became deep and thick, so that when the pursuers passed by, they did not even suspect that the one whom they were chasing was hidden there, and they went their way. It's important, there is a story like that which is recounted, but see where its origin is. While drop by drop the sacred blood fell, fertilizing the soil, the bush was covered with marvelous flowers. Scarlet, large, crowded with petals, innumerable drops of blood. These are the flowers which express and contain for us the divine's love. Now, do you notice something interesting in the story? There's the little puzzle. Okay, someone asked the mother, Mother, who was he? Mother's answer is, did I say it was a he? Very interesting. Did I say it was a he? How meticulously she has. It's obviously her own story, but she is holding it back. It is something worth doing. Many of her stories she has spoken in this way. Like about the theater in Paris or Tokyo, I'm forgetting, Paris. Many of the stories are her stories. She said, see, I was the one in my previous incarnation. I came here as a divine being and people. Hasn't she said that since the beginning of the earth, I have been here whenever there was the possibility of manifesting a ray of consciousness? She is talking of a pre-Vedic age, Chaldea. And it's a Chaldean legend, which means it is even before that. So just imagine when people talk about, you know, who mother is and what, and she tells it very sweetly, and we may well say it is her love. Very interesting. She is asked how to face criticism and she says something very interesting. Of course, at first she's saying, just don't bother. People say what they have to say. Don't be a people pleaser. People will anyways say. I keep telling this story of Kallu. Whatever you may do, people will say. If you are kind to someone, they will say you are weak. If you are firm with someone, they will say, see how cruel he is. People will say, so don't worry. If you worry about people, you can't take a step even in life, forget about yoga. Because she says there are three stages of yoga in this very volume. She says first is when you are part of the mass. So first stage is when you become an individual. You make your choices. Second stage, this individuality you have to offer to the divine. Third is when the divine accepts it and manifests himself through you. So these are the three stages. So, but here she gives a very interesting, which can be applied anywhere. How can one become indifferent to criticism? But just like when Arjuna is asked a question, but Krishna reveals a whole world, something of general application. So she says, by climbing somewhere up on the ladder, in one's own consciousness, looking at things a little more vastly, a little more generally. For example, if at a particular moment there is something which holds you, grips you like that, holds you tight, close pressed, and you absolutely want it to happen, and you are fighting against a terrible obstacle, you see something which is preventing it from happening. If simply just at that moment you begin to feel, to realize the myriads and myriads of years there were before this present moment, and the myriads and myriads of years there will be after this present moment, and what importance this little event has in relation to all that? There is no need to enter a spiritual consciousness or anything else. Simply enter into relation with space and time, boundlessness of space and endlessness of time. It's like a remedy immediately. So then she says another. She says you can visualize these things. And there are other methods. So one of them is, there is a Chinese sage, Wu Wei. That's where this is a story mother was very fond of. She has read this. It's an amazing book, small little book. I think Wak may have this. In mother's classes, she only mentions it. So she speaks about, who advises you to lie down upon events as one floats on one's back upon the sea? There is a poem of Sri Aurobindo, Yogi on the Whirlpool, with a similar idea. It's used as a technique of meditation, incidentally, as a method of meditation. Imagining the immensity of the ocean and that you let yourself go floating upon this, upon the waves, you see, like something contemplating the skies and letting itself be carried away. In Chinese, they call this Wu Wei. Of course, present-day China is different. And then she says, you can look at the stars, gazing at the stars. And sometimes you can add, you know, when people tell you things, I often, once somebody said, this human being did this, or this human being said that, why, this is a dematization, why? So I tell them, because you have answered this human being. End of the story. Why you want to put it, this human being or that human? Human nature is full of all kinds of things. What is so special about this or that human being? So people say things. Why should you be bothered? And this is so powerful, this floating. And personally, an image that I have used, even for myself earlier, and you know, even for people, that you are on Shirisagar. So I put that image because you are ocean of light. And all around are stars and worlds moving around. That vastness, you are floating. And you are in that she, Sagar, is mother's lap. That's it. Just takes a moment of cure. But again, because it's free of cost, I don't know how much effect it'll be. Because it's a marketing world. Huh? Unless you pay money, you don't feel good. You have to make somebody pickpocket you. And then you say, see, I did a $100 or $1,000 course. It was so nice, so refreshing. And if you say, bhai, ye to aise bhi kar leta. No, no, you don't know. That's how. But sincerely, you have only to have the sense of relativity between your little person and the importance you give to the things which concern you. And the universal immensity, this is enough. So you see, this is so important that, you know, if you look at things, and we have wonderful thing about this rebirth. I don't know why people don't use it more often. Rebirth means so many lives you have lived and so many lives that are yet to come. And why bother about this small little fraction of moment? So we'll finally come to something very interesting. Everything is interesting. Okay. So this about one of my favorite passages on page 396. She says what the divine can do. And she gives the example of there are two approaches. One is from the heart and the other is from the head. And she gives the story of a girl. And what used to happen is, what is quite miraculous according to ordinary ideas is that as soon as they reach that degree of consecration, so she, which identifies them through their psychic being with the divine presence, suddenly they become endowed with capacities of expression absolutely unknown to their nature. And she gives the example of a girl who would, opera dancer who would dance, and a very good one, and had been put to study there at the age of 8. So then she says she almost did not know how to express herself, and her intelligence, though evident, was untrained. Well, she was attracted like that and felt an imperious need to seek the divine because she was not that intelligent in front of others, to consecrate herself to him. And she began to dance in his honor at first, like the juggler of Notre Dame. And she truly danced most remarkably. And then suddenly she wanted to express what she was feeling. She began writing letters which were wonderfully poetic. She said surpassing things, and in a still surprising way, page followed page, and she wrote all with an extraordinary facility. It happened that due to certain circumstances, she had some difficulties. There was something in her nature which pulled her back toward the old nature she had given up, which made her practical and materialistic, made her see things externally, and immediately she became incapable of putting two words together. She could not write a line without making numberless spelling mistakes. So this she tells a living example of, you know, what the divine can do. And in that context, he says, just one of my favorite lines, and people often ask, what should I put on the door? This is a line which can be put on the door. It's not the head which has wings, it's the heart. Page 396 on Collected Works, Volume 7. It's this, yes, this inevitable need. Nothing else counts. That's everything. Only that. This need of the divine. And this is the first thing one obtains. For this is the one true joy, the sign that we are. And so after all, one doesn't care a rap for obstacles and difficulties. What can that do to you? It doesn't count. One laughs at time also. What does it matter to you if it takes long? For a much longer time, you will have the joy of aspiration, of consecration, of self-giving. When people would say, how much time it will take for supramentalization? Why are you worried? If it takes 1,000 years or 10,000 years, you will have the joy of serving the divine in this way. For this is the one true joy, and this joy fades away when there is something egoistic. And because there is a demand, which one calls a need, which is mixed in the consecration, otherwise the joy never disappears. This is the first thing one obtains and the last one realizes, and it is the sign of victory. That's how you see in Savitri, And Savitri tells that, I have already conquered over thee within, because I do not shake in front of you. I am full of calm, love, joy, everything is there. And then it is the last realization. So this joy is given immediately. So long as you can't be in joy, a constant, calm, peaceful, luminous, invariable joy, well, it means that you have still to work to purify yourself. And sometimes work hard. But this is the sign. And that's why she at one place, mother says, that's, we'll come to that in volume 10. She says that, and for this, let us avoid people who are very serious. So, this is and so beautiful. So, finally. Okay. She says it's only this joy which can conquer the adversary. Very clearly she says. And the final part is, of course, as always, a lesson for all of us, both in the ashram and outside. And she first describes that we all are representative in this path. And so each one does the sadhana for everyone. So if she gives an example, if there are 50 people and only one is seriously taking up the yoga, then others who are not taking up, they will benefit from it. So the disciple asks, so she says, yes, your difficulties will multiply. So he says, so? He says, in that case, the best case scenario is all are doing yoga. Then everybody shares with others. But this is a, practically it's a very rare thing. So always in the ashram, she said, there are only few people who are doing yoga. And she was asked, then what about others? She said, they are there to give the experience of the world. You can't. So few people are doing yoga, but that's okay. Everybody is receiving the prasad of the yoga. After all, it's a yajna. So there are few people who come for the yajna and what a preparation and mantra and havi and everything. But prasad everybody takes. And that's what collective sadhana is. Collective yoga is not gathering a group of people together and, you know, making members and going on that kind of drive. Collective yoga is where each person, because his consciousness expands, starts doing for everybody else. And then she says, this is how the ashram came into being. That they had this choice, the mother and Sri Aurobindo, that should we go ahead alone and realize everything, or should we take everybody together? And then she says the choice was, the decision was spontaneous, so they started taking everybody together. So she says, so in addition to your own personal difficulty, you have all the frictions, all the contacts, all the reactions, all the things which come from outside as a test. Exactly on the weak point, the thing that's most difficult to solve. It is there that you will hear from someone the phrase which was just the one you did not want to hear. Someone will make towards you that gesture which was exactly the one which could shock you. You find yourself facing a circumstance, a movement, a fact, an object, anything at all. Just the things which, how I should have liked this not to happen. People change departments. But you can't change your consciousness. Till you change it, you will keep on meeting the same situation everywhere. And more, because you do not do your yoga for yourself alone, you do the yoga for everybody. So that's why she says, when people come and tell me, I come here for peace, quietness, leisure, to do my yoga, I say, no, 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 go away. Immediately, somewhere else, she would often send to Raman Maharshi's ashram, go to Tiruvannamalai. You want peace and do individual yoga, you go there. You will be much more peaceful anywhere else than here. Of course, there is a wonderful peace here which comes. But that's a peace then once established, even in the battlefield it is there. If someone comes and says, well, here I am. I feel that I should consecrate myself to the divine work. I am ready to do any work at all that you give me. Then I say, good, that's all right. If you have goodwill, endurance and some capacity, it is all right. But to find the solitude necessary for your inner development, it is better to go somewhere else, anywhere else, but not here. So, she reveals all this. And finally, she closes by saying, and she speaks about, you will also find within yourself the very opposite of what you have to manifest. And I have given the example already once, I think. For instance, a being who must represent fearlessness, courage, you know, a capacity to hold on without giving way before all dangers and all fights. Usually somewhere in his being, he is a terribly, terrible coward. And he has to struggle against this almost constantly because this represents the victory he has to win in the world. Here it increases because this is the place of the realization. The monkeys were happy in Kishkindha. After all, Bali, whatever it was, looked after them. Even Sugriv would have. But the moment they say, we will come with Ram, then the challenge starts. So she says, here it multiplies. In life, you are unconscious. You pass all your life in an absolutely vague semi-consciousness. You know nothing about yourself except just an appearance, nothing more. So that's another reason why people don't even know that they are having problems inside. Because they just feel many things that they do unconsciously, mechanically, they think it's cool, it's okay. When you come here, you become conscious that, are you? What a foolish, stupid man I was. First step is, of course, everybody else seems stupid and foolish and you are the only intelligent person. That's primitive. So, and you will always be incapable of fulfilling your mission and therefore you do not meet the obstacle in the heart of the difficulty. Only in appearance. You are all in the midst of appearances. It's simply that. So your faults are small, your virtues are small. At one place somebody asked Sri Aurobindo, why do great people have defects? He says, why not? Great people have great defects. Everything gets magnified. And that's what they have to struggle with. But of course, the victory is also much greater. Your capacities are mediocre and your difficulties are mediocre. You are entirely mediocre constantly. It is only when you begin to walk on the path of realization that your possibilities become real and your difficulties become much greater. Quite naturally, things become intensified. This is why I tell people, if you can't find peace and solitude in yourself, can't isolate yourself sufficiently to enter within yourself, if you can't do this in the conditions of ordinary life, it is certainly not here that you will be able to do it. Because your first difficulty will be that you will feel invaded by everything and everybody and will be absolutely unable to isolate yourself. If you have learned to do it before coming here, then it will be good. And for everything, it is the same way. People who are ill-natured, those who have no control over their anger, for instance, are much worse here than in the ordinary world. Because in the ordinary world, they are controlled by all the necessities of life. And because, for example, when they go to an office, if they get into a temper against the boss, they are thrown out. This is one reason. Person who brings the Zomato. You may even say, aye, der ho gaya, ye ho gaya, wo ho gaya, poor fellow. Sorry, sir. He'll turn back and curse you very badly. But his facade. And then you'll come here. Yes, somebody may just outrightly say, what nonsense, why are you late? You'll say, see, the Zomato fellow behaves better. He behaves better, but is not better. There's a difference. There was a person here who used to drink so much. Not this, these are justifications. But mother said, he was an American. Somebody asked, why have you kept him here? She said, if he would have gone to Himalayas, he would have been a great yogi. He has taken this upon himself. So it is a very special place where a special work is being done. And once this is done in this laboratory, people know what it means to work in a research lab. Its effect is translated all over the world. This is the contribution of the ashram to the world. It is a laboratory of human evolution, if you like. And therefore the government should recognize it as a scientific research laboratory. If they get into a temper against the boss, they are thrown out. While here, we don't throw them out. They are simply told, try to control yourself. Jai Maa.